Spark Media presents Cosmic Creatures by Jason Kent Nord. Performed for you by Adam Anagnostou, Mike Kelly, John Yonker, and Luke Langfeld. Sound design by Dan Steffens. This episode contains content that may be alarming to some listeners. Please check the episode notes for more detailed descriptions. And now, episode 12, Refraction.
The light is blinding. The heat instantaneous. We're all knocked off our feet as the garage windows shatter and the whole house shakes. Crashing to the ground, I hit my head and black out, if only for a moment. My brain soon flickers in a state of black fog. Am I alive? Am I dead? I open my eyes, half expecting to see another angel. I see Ellie. She's not glowing with wings. She's alive and sitting up. We've been blown back into the garage. The sight of her is comforting. As my senses gradually awaken from their haze, I take in my surroundings. Both Nick and Fitch are in motion. A reassuring sight. We're all still alive. No visible injuries. No limbs askew. No blood in sight. "Everyone okay?" Nick calls. His voice is hoarse. "Ow!" moans Fitch. "I'm okay, I think," Ellie says, rubbing her arm. "My ears are ringing a bit, but I don't think I have a concussion." "Same here," I grunt. With a sense of urgency, I muster the strength to rise, feeling soreness all over as I struggle to stand. Despite the discomfort, I'm relieved to find no serious injuries. Ellie and Nick also rise, while Fitch wallows.
"Oh, I might have a concussion," Fitch complains. "And broken bones, and internal bleeding. That's it. I'm dying."
Worried, Ellie makes her way over to Fitch. "How many fingers am I holding up?" she asks. After a beat and noticing Fitch thinking of something stupid to say, she adds, "Be serious."
"Fine. 2,
he concedes. "Are they blurry?"
"No."
"Then you should be okay," Nick concludes. But he is immediately distracted. His eyes widen.
"Look,"
he says, gesturing towards the garage opening and the scene beyond it. I struggle to comprehend the surreal landscape before us. A vast expanse of scorched earth extends into the distance. My old home lies in ruins, reduced to a scattering of burning lumber. The refrigerator is wedged between two burning trees. The buckled water heater dangles precariously from a single copper pipe, protruding like the centerpiece of a fiery fountain. In the front yard, the kitchen sink lays overturned, reflecting the shimmering light of the blaze. A burst of static alerts me to the fact that I'm still holding the radio.
"Harstad! You son of a bitch!"
Dr. Hagen fumes.
"If you've hurt my kids!"
"Why?" I shout into the radio.
"Why? You can't do this!"
"Kids? Kale?"
It's Colonel Harstad. I can't believe what I'm witnessing. It's senseless. Hellacious. How did it come to this so quickly? Everything to the south lies in ruins. If we were any closer, we'd be dead. Oh God. We'd be dead. My legs grow weak, and I drop to my knees. As I do, Galileo approaches. His demeanor has reverted to its original state. His narrow eyes, chattering teeth, vibrating body, and raised hackles add to my overwhelmed state. Does he blame me for this? His intensity demands attention, eclipsing my other emotions. I momentarily feel the sting of being falsely accused as it becomes clear he's in a ferocious state. Fear of imminent attack erodes my previously trusted instincts. Yet, my fight or flight reflexes remain dormant. It's all too much. I'm on the verge of surrendering. Then I realize he's actually looking past me. A giant creature shrouded in smoke at the base of the driveway. Its four arms resemble scimitars, and its stout legs split midway down like upside-down Ys. Though all I can hear is the ringing in my ears and the crackle of fire. The beast appears to be roaring and raging at the flames. I can't help but think. Same. Then it turns, its triangle eyes flickering in the red glow, locking directly onto us. Primal fear resurrects within me, stirring me to my feet. Assisted by a tug from Nick, who has come to my aid, a sense of focus begins to cut through the chaos of Armageddon. As Slicer takes two steps closer and stops, its attention turns to the street. A horse emerges from the haze, running up the street to escape the fire. Its mane and tail are singed, trailing wisps of smoke. It coughs and snorts, struggling to see, heading straight toward him. Slicer jolts out to intercept it, and with a single heavy lunge, spears its arm straight through the horse's torso. The momentum of the collision lifts the horse up, and they both flip backward in a suplex onto the pavement.
The cave, Nick suggests. Go to the cave!
We all take off, skirting the charred regions in a panicked, adrenaline-fueled race. I hear Dr. Hagen over the radio, but there's no breaking stride to try and answer.
Kids! He calls. Kale!
With Nick in the lead, Ellie and I stay close on his heels. Galileo does quite well to keep pace with Fitch, who labors behind, too consumed with running to whine. He trips and faceplants. I stop to wait for him, as do Nick and Ellie.
Harstad! You asshole!
Dr. Hagen's voice blares over the radio. And then we sense it. Nick spots it first and points.
Jet!
He swiftly dives for cover behind a fallen tree. Ellie, still catching her breath, stands frozen, staring in disbelief or maybe shock as the aircraft approaches. Panicked by our vulnerability, I react instinctively, diving to tackle Ellie to the ground. We roll into a depression near the fallen tree. Fitch, oblivious to the danger, rises to his feet and gapes at us. Galileo, by his side, halts in confusion. And then the jet roars overhead. Fitch drops like a sack of bricks. Galileo flattens. I close my eyes and tense up, tightly gripping Ellie, waiting for the explosion. The moment stretches into an eternity, but the immediate blast we all expect never comes. Slowly, I relax my muscles and cautiously open my eyes. Ellie peers up from under me, and now I feel awkward, though unapologetic. I had covered her, but apparently for naught. I roll off her and rise to a kneeling position. A brief, wry smile from Ellie conveys a mix of confusion and appreciation before she too begins to rise. The radio crackles, and Colonel Harstad's voice filters through in a broken message.
Kids! Dawn! Kids!
Is all I catch. The sound of crashing brush nearby startles me. A deer bolts out of the woods a few yards away, between my position and where Fitch and Galileo are hunkered down. Chasing the deer is a multicolored, tiger-sized creature with a sleek body. Most stunning, however, are the branch-like protrusions along its frame that trail ribbons of seaweed-like leaves. It's like a land version of a leafy sea dragon. A surreal blend of flora and fauna that defies conventional classification. When I first saw it in the inventory, I questioned whether the scan had inaccurately merged plant features with its body. But there's no mistaking it now. This creature is part plant, part tiger, and wholly intimidating. Its ivy hue emits a palpable aura of toxicity. Thankfully, it continues its chase after the deer, completely oblivious to our presence. Galileo is now up and alert, his gaze fixated on the beast. Nick motions for us all to stay quiet and gather around him. It's a wise decision. I quickly decide to turn off the radio. Now is not the time for chatter, and I want to avoid attracting any unwanted attention. Rising to my feet, I help Ellie get to hers, and we join Nick. Glancing back, we notice Fitch still kneeling. Despite our gestures, he seems to have lost his nerve, opting to plop back down on his butt.
Why me? He loudly complains toward the sky. I'm not a bad kid.
Then, after a moment of earnest reconsideration, he adds,
Well, not
alien monsters in the dark forest with bombs dropping on me bad. Nick, Ellie, and I exchange exasperated glances. Now's not the time for this. We have to reach the cave before more bombs hit.
Oh, yeesh! There's more!
Fitch yelps, having seen something above in the trees. Fear and urgency flood his expression as he struggles to his feet and stumbles over to us. Be quiet, Nick scolds. I glance where he was looking and spot a glow. It's one of those puffy parrots, I report in a hushed tone. Forget it! We need to get to the cave and figure things out from there, Nick urges, motioning for us to get moving. After a few more minutes of mindless jogging, we finally reach the cave. It's dark outside and even darker in there. We all hesitate, a bit intimidated, before entering a few steps. A noise in the bushes outside grabs our attention. Galileo immediately senses the danger and scampers deeper into the cave. We all follow his lead, backing into the pitch dark, but keeping eyes toward the threat. Soon, the rhino-headed creature that burst through the capture bay doors, Exhibit 23, emerges from the woods into the clearing around the cave entrance. Oh shit. We're cornered. As we watch from the darkness, we see the beast stop in the clearing, apparently sniffing the air. Oh god. I hope it isn't picking up our scent. Thankfully, it doesn't seem to, as it races off into the night toward the smoke and the bombing zone. In the far back of the cave, around the corner, a dim brown glow emanates from Galileo. We retreat there, settling onto ledges and the wall that make perfect benches. Relief washes over me, and we all exhale simultaneously. Ellie pulls a small flashlight from one of her pockets and improves the lighting while keeping it partially covered to avoid attracting unwanted attention from any other passing creatures outside. Fitch, still recovering from the physical activity, manages to speak between panting breaths.
Did you guys see those things?
He asks, tossing the BB gun under the ground.
We're so dead,
he concludes in one breath. They bombed us, Nick decries. But why? Heavy breathing is the only response as everyone tries to settle down. Ellie motions to me for the radio. I turn it back on and hand it over. Colonel Harstad is clearly ready to resort to extreme measures without concern for collateral damage. The severity of the situation, the reality of it, this can't be happening.
What the hell is taking so long? Dr. Mintz chirps into the radio at Colonel Harstad, her tone icy and commanding. Come to your senses! Colonel Harstad appears visibly flustered and angry, but before he can raise his radio to respond, another transmission crackles over the frequency. Dad? Dad? Ellie's voice breaks through the static. You there? Overwhelming relief floods through me at the sound of my baby girl's voice. I reach for the radio and Dr. Mintz hands it over without hesitation. I quickly turn up the volume. Ellie? I'm here. Are you okay? Is everyone okay? Ellie's response is fragmented. Need help. Caves. Bombing. Tell them. Static interrupts her message. Damn it. They're in trouble. Ellie, you're breaking up. Ellie, repeat. But only more static answers. They need help, and I can't shake the fear that they were hurt in the bombing. I'm done with Colonel Harstad. Exasperated, I gesture wildly at him, silently demanding a response. Finally, Colonel Hardass relents.
I've stopped the bombing for now. At first light, we'll resume.
And then he relents to the kids.
We're coming to get ya.
Dr. Mintz and I exchange broad grins. Finally. We're coming for you, I rejoice into the radio. Hang in there, we're coming.
I'm not okay. That horrific explosion didn't physically tear me apart, but it definitely devastated me. I dared to hope. I dared to believe we could fix things, but reality has spoken. I don't need to hear Dr. Hagen's responses to Ellie on the radio to understand that I belong firmly back in a dark corner. Here. Are... One okay? Dr. Hagen's fragmented message feels apropos to my current state. No! Ellie fires back. We need help. We're in the caves. Tell them to stop the bombing. Tell them to come help us.
Good luck, I think. Not only is it futile to expect them to listen to her, but I can't help but think she should keep it concise when it's breaking up like this. Something like, help, in caves, stop bombing. But whatever. A different voice pierces the static in segments. Colonel Harstad, I assume.
Bombing! Now! First light! You!
I can only imagine how he would tell me off if he were here.
What did he say?
Fitch asks.
Shh! Nick quiets him.
Ing! In there!
Dr. Hagen adds to the folly.
Hello?
Ellie prompts.
Hello?
Ellie finally turns off the static, but the sense of hopelessness lingers. Nick furrows his brow.
Did they say they're bombing here? Or are we supposed to stay here?
Something about first light, too, Ellie adds. Are they giving us time to leave? Or do we have to stake it out until morning?
Great,
Fitch says dryly.
We've got a 50-50 chance on rescue or getting blown up.
I focus on Galileo, lying at my feet like a sad puppy. It's like he's marked me as the reason for his plight. I sense the weight of everyone staring at me, but I don't want to make eye contact, so I don't. I stare blankly at Galileo, and in the gloomy silence, I feel myself slide back into the darkness that's been held at bay with all of the activity of the recent hours.
How did you do it?
Nick finally breaks the silence, his inquiry surprisingly tender.
It draws my eyes up for a momentary glance before I drop them back down and shrug.
How did you know what to put in the computer, Kale? He presses. It's like you knew the coordinates.
How can I answer? How do you explain what you just know instinctively?
I don't know, I dodge. I'm sorry, okay?
No, seriously, he persists. How is it possible that you knew the coordinates of some planet that happened to have life? It's too incredible. It's impossible odds. You knew. How did you know?
I shrug, feeling tears form. I close my eyes and tilt back my head. I really wish someone would change the subject.
Even I'm not dumb enough to think it was just luck, Kale, adds Fitch,
his tone surprisingly warm and almost tender. Where's the obnoxiousness when I need the distraction?
How did you know?
I look to Ellie, hoping she'll see the pain in my eyes and rescue me from the conversation. Instead, despite the tears welling in my eyes, she looks like she wants to know too. I close my eyes and relent. I died when I was young, I reveal, leaving it hanging there. It's the secret I've never shared. A painful truth I've kept hidden for fear of being seen as an even bigger freak. I saw the planet, I add after a beat, letting the other shoe drop. I was there. Now it's all out there, exposed to the only people left on the planet who might care about me. I open my eyes and look at each of them in turn, prepared for their silent judgment. Ellie and Nick exchange surprised glances but withhold any obvious judgment, wanting to hear more. Fitch's face is crinkled and unsure, but he's holding any typical Fitch comments and patiently anticipating further explanation. I was taken by an angel, I slowly continue, with great reservation. I saw this planet and all these creatures. It was beautiful. The angel told me I had more to discover, and then I woke up in an ambulance, and my mom was dead. My dad wouldn't laugh or smile anymore. They all turn somber. I feel encouraged that they aren't ridiculing or dismissing me. Well, I'd expect Nick and Ellie to be nice about it, but Fitch's solemn reaction emboldens me to keep sharing. We had a car accident. They call what I had an NDE, near-death experience. Kids who have them often develop gifts for music or science or math, but it's not a gift. It's a curse. I take a deep, frustrated breath, making an awkward, stifling sound. I don't want to be a crybaby right now. I don't know why the angel showed me that planet. I wondered if it was a delusion until all this. I guess I was meant to be a part of this,
But I still can't imagine why. I mean, really, am I supposed to bring doom to our planet? To theirs? I shake my head, confused, angry, and bitter. I hate it. I can't do it anymore. I can't cope anymore. I'm just like my dad. The words trigger tears and wrench my heart. No, screw your dad, Nick defends. You're better than that. I know you, Kale. It's nice of him to say, but it hardly does any good. Dad gave up. I don't know how not to. I don't know about angels or your dad, Kale. Fitch, of all people, counsels. But I know if we're going to survive aliens and armies, we need you more than anyone. Wow. Such a sentiment from Fitch can't help but grab my attention. Feels like a life vest splashing within arm's reach in this sea of misery that consumes me. Dumbass here is right, Kale, Nick proclaims in an effort to lighten the mood. There's got to be more in that head of yours. If your instincts started this, they can get us out. We believe in you, Kale, Ellie professes. You just need to believe in yourself. Well then, all of this support is something new to me. It's much more than generic encouragement from a flawed father. I can't help but feel a bit buoyed, but it's scary to embrace. Hope hasn't ever helped me before. No, you're all better off without me, I deflect. Too bad, brother, Nick responds. We're here. The word brother affects me. Yeah, and we're not leaving, adds Ellie. Come on now. What's that brilliant mind thinking? I don't know what to say. I hope your brilliant mind has some better weapons, Fitch wisecracks. We're not slaying the Beastie Bunch with baseball bats and BB guns. He has a point. Ellie, staring at Galileo, asks, How did you do it with Galileo? It's nubs, Fitch corrects, returning to form. Ellie dismisses him with an eye roll. Kale, you knew, she pushes. You connected. Can you do it again? Yeah, be a creature whisperer, Fitch says, tapping into his reservoir of bad television reruns and mimicking the dog whisperer, Caesar Millen. Tell them we're dominant. It was just an instinct, I try to explain. I mean, from their perspective, we're all of a sudden inside some strange structure. They probably don't even have a reference for a building where they're from. Then they get out and everything around them is strange. They're scared and isolated. I just connected. I've always been able to connect with animals, but I don't think it's going to work with most of those things. Especially with the bombs and stuff. We all revert to puzzling over our predicament. It's strange that the thing that got the horse was obsessing over the fire, Nick remarks, referring to the slicer, and that rhino-looking one outside ran toward the smoke. That's not how our animals react. It's a brilliant observation, one that I had not yet articulated in my thoughts. Studying Galileo, I reflect on his behaviors. As if sensing my interest, he sits up and pays attention, dipping and raising his head a bit, and inching closer. Making eye contact, I silently connect. What is it, buddy? What are we feeling and thinking? What did he say? Fitch asks, surprising me enough to wonder if I said something out loud. I don't know exactly, I reply. We don't share any language or even any imagery. But I think he might be cold or something. I don't know if I really sensed that from Galileo or made it up. I suppose instincts are just instincts. They aren't conversations, but how these creatures feel about our temperatures is intriguing. How come he's so quiet? Asks Ellie. Another great question. A light bulb moment comes to me. Infrasound, I blurt out. I wonder if they communicate by infrasound. I need my stuff. Fitch flops onto his back. Don't tell me we need to go back, he moans. What's infrasound? Ellie asks. Low-frequency sound that people can't hear, I explain. Oh, yeah, Nick recognizes. Like tigers use, right? Yeah, elephants, tigers, and a lot of other animals use it to communicate, I add. Like dogs and dog whistles? Ellie asks. Kind of. That's ultrasonic. The tarsier. You know, those tiny little primates that look like wingless bats, I probe. Big ears, always look like they're yawning. She apparently doesn't know. Anyway, scientists found that tarsiers weren't actually yawning. They were emitting ultrasonic screeches. Well, Nick presses, if we figure that out, what would that do for us? We could maybe track where they are, I reply, eliciting raised eyebrows. Or lure them, I add, causing them to furrow.
Yeah, Fitch cracks sarcastically. Let's do that.
He fills a silent moment with a chuckle at the absurdity of the idea. What kind of trap would we even set? Nick wonders, taking the thought seriously, as am I. We'd need some place to enclose them, I think out loud.
Oh, God! You're serious?
Fitch moans, slapping a palm to his forehead. Something fenced in? Nick brainstorms. Or someone's house? This cave, Ellie declares.
How the hell would that work?
Challenges Fitch. We all think for a long moment. I'm starting to feel a bit better. Perhaps it's the relief of finally sharing my secret and not facing judgment for it. Maybe it's from releasing pent-up emotions and allowing myself to breathe again. Maybe it's the support I received from all of them. Maybe I'm simply tired of dwelling in darkness and despair. Whatever the reason, I'm determined not to let this opportunity slip away. I might have some doubts, but honestly, what do I have to lose? I'd rather risk everything to set things right for my only friends than succumb to a life of despair like my dad. I don't know, Nick finally says, but we need to get Kale back to his gadgets so he can figure something out.
All right, Fitch concedes, but I need a snack while you do your nerd magic.
Colonel Harstead grabbed three men, one with a military radio and two armed with weapons, and led them, along with me, toward the building exit. Dr. Mintz and Jawhens stayed in the capture bay to continue to see what they could learn of the alien landscape in the limited time remaining to investigate it. As our hastily assembled group bursts out into the night toward the two awaiting Humvees, I'm uncertain whether Colonel Harstead will be joining us. However, he swiftly jumps behind the wheel of one of the vehicles, putting that question to rest. One soldier takes shotgun, while the other two hop into the second vehicle. I opt for the back of Colonel Harstead's ride. The vehicle roars to life, and we surge forward with a jerk. The quickest route to those caves is around the backside, I advise. It's shorter than heading through our subdivision. I'm certain of that, and eager to arrive as soon as possible. One or more of the kids might be injured. My only reservation is that if they've already left the caves, we'll miss them via this route. There's an ATV trail that passes about 200 yards behind the caves. The turnoff is about a mile and a half ahead, I instruct. Colonel Harstead's phone interrupts. He glances at the screen, silences it, and sets it aside with noticeable unease. The caller ID reads General Bollock. The soldier riding shotgun seems taken aback by the dismissal of the call, appearing to want to say something, but thinking better of it. For the first time, it dawns on me that Harstead must answer for his decisions, and rejecting the call is a clear sign he's taking a risk. This adversary of mine may not be as villainous as I thought. While I don't particularly feel sorry for him, rescuing my children is far more important to me than him not catching hell. Perhaps I should express my gratitude to him. Thanks, Colonel, I say. I catch a raised eyebrow in the rearview mirror.
Just keep your eyes peeled for anything that glows,
is all he replies.
Galileo seems happy to be out of the cave and on the move. He bounds ahead of us on the path, occasionally veering off before rejoining us. He seems vigilant, but unlike a dog, he doesn't appear to be led by a sense of smell. He's exploring visually. The others are quiet. I think they're all happy to have an immediate goal, to get back to the house. But for me, I'm troubled. concerned that they're putting too much faith in me. Fearful that we're too brazen, scared of what might happen come daylight, puzzled by how we could build an adequate trap that could corral the largest number of creatures at once. I doubt we have time to be running around and conducting multiple operations. Maybe if we can capture a bunch more creatures, the military will be convinced to find the last ones themselves. Like Slicer and Rhino Head and Land Dragon. How the hell are we supposed to contend with them with just a BB gun? Well, the first step, I comfort myself, is simply to see if we can figure out how responsive Galileo is to infrasound and other frequencies. I also want to check out his responsiveness to light and maybe even temperature. I just can't shake the image of Rhino Head moving toward the bombing zone. What's the attraction? If we can discover the answers, successfully test them, and share the results with Colonel Harstad, maybe they'd be more inclined to take over the dirty work and the chaos can come to an end. I emerge from my thoughts enough to see that Galileo has wandered off to the right and stopped. He's staring up at a tree off to our side. The hairs on my neck stand up, and my senses heighten. A muted glow bleeds through the leaves. A pair of the flapper creatures appear nuzzled together, possibly asleep. Nick sees them too and raises a hand for everyone to stop. I see the anxiety in both Fitch and Ellie, and I'm sure they see it in me. I'm just thankful Fitch is remaining quiet. I note that Galileo is not in his aggressive mode. He must not view them as a threat like he did Slicer. Nick raises the BB gun, aiming it at one of the flappers. They are on a fairly low branch, and he has a clear, close shot. My conscience and a gut feeling stir me to reach out and grab Nick gently by his forearm. "Don't shoot them," I whisper. "Why not? I don't think they'd harm anyone." "Kale, we need to," he whispers. "The bombs won't stop until they're all gone." I know he's right. Every additional creature accounted for brings us closer to the end. I don't like it, but it's the right move. I can only sigh and nod. Ellie has crept closer and chimes in with a cautious whisper. "How do you think Galileo will react?" "You guys go on ahead," Nick suggests. "Fitch and I will hang back until you're off a ways." Fitch appears highly anxious, yet eager to be teamed up with Nick. Ellie and I share a glance and nod in reluctant agreement. Neither of us is thrilled, and neither of us wants to witness it. Careful not to make noise, I coax Galileo with eye contact and a wave to follow as Ellie and I continue up the trail. Galileo follows a couple of paces before stopping to note that Nick and Fitch are not following. He then turns to look at me. I swear he understands exactly what is happening, because he prances quietly past Ellie and me to resume a lookout role. Perhaps I'm inventing the idea of his awareness to comfort my own conscience, but I doubt it. I do take some comfort from his reaction, though. It's almost a vote of confidence that taking those creatures is no great sin. Ellie seems eager to put the matter behind her. She moves with purpose, Galileo zooms farther ahead, and I need to pick up the pace. Just as I kick it up a gear, I see Galileo jolt to a stop. Again, the hairs on my neck rise as I recognize a very faint glow in the grass. Ellie, surveying our left flank, fails to notice, and I reach out, grab her by the wrist. The quiet alarm in her eyes as she snaps her head around heightens mine. I point. She understands. Galileo appears to be on edge, in and out of alert mode, but fully intent and wary of his find. Creeping closer, I recognize a creature measuring no taller than 20 inches, with stilt-like legs. I remember it from the inventory. And I think there is a similar but much larger creature. Although, there are enough differences in the shapes that I think they are separate creatures. Its color patterns remind me of some of the flora in the capture bay, and I can imagine it camouflages itself very well in its own environment. Here, despite having less luminescence than many of the other creatures, it sticks out with its odd colorations of purples, blues, teals, and oranges. The thing seems to be laboring, but I don't see any clear injuries. It seems to have taken note of Galileo, but it is collapsed in a pile of limbs and can barely move. Galileo appears apprehensive, continually leaning closer and then pulling away. It's almost like an animal encountering a porcupine or a snake. The creature has his full attention, but has him leery about getting too near. I wonder if his hesitation is due to the creature's apparent illness. It's suffering, Ellie concludes. She crouches down and debates whether to reach out to it. Galileo dives into Ellie's hesitant hand, pushes into her knees, and knocks her back. He chirps at her once, as if scolding her. Ellie is up quickly and steps back next to me. Galileo parks himself at our feet, facing the creature. Nick and Fitch arrive at our side.
"We got 'em both,"
Fitch reports before noticing our new find. "Don't touch it," I say, pointing. "It's poisonous." Nick, Fitch, and Ellie all look at me, astonished that I could make such a pronouncement. I shrug, feeling good about my instinctive conclusion as Galileo moves to block Nick and Fitch's path.
"Well, we should definitely kill it,"
Fitch surmises.
"I can do this one,"
he says, reaching to Nick for the BB gun. "Use a rock," I suggest. It seems foolish to pepper each part of it with BBs to ensure it's dead. "And don't let its guts splatter on you." Fitch suddenly looks less confident and more concerned.
"I'll do it," says Nick, handing the gun to Fitch.
We hope you've enjoyed Cosmic Creatures, a Spark Media production. This program was directed and executive produced by H.G. Zeisler, featuring the voice talents of Adam Anagnostou as Cale Rhodes, Mike Kelly as Russell Rhodes, John Yonker as Dr. Elliot Hagen, and Luke Langfelt as Major Roggy. Text copyright 2022 by Jason Kent Nord. Illustrations including cover and episode art by Meredith Tuvey. Sound design by Dan Steffens. Story edits by Emily Nord and H.G. Zeisler. A special thanks to our founding Spark storytellers. Rest assured that no animals, cosmic or earthly, were harmed in the production of this episode. Enjoyed what you heard? Check out more Spark stories and find out more about Spark Media on our website, sparkmedia.com. That's sparkmedia.com. Or check us out on Instagram or Facebook at Spark Media. Links and episode notes. Interested in telling stories? Apply to be a Spark storyteller today. We're looking for writers, editors, composers, voice talent, and more. It takes a village to tell a story, and we need you. Link in episode notes. Audio production copyright 2024 by Spark Media LLC, all rights reserved.